And, you know, I think I probably heard a couple of people in internet speak be like, I'm from Canada land. I feel like there's a way to kind of like use that term and point it towards some kind of an indictment or some, give it some grit, give it some tension.
So does it have an eye roll baked into it?
No, I'm trying to get away from the, like, I don't know if it succeeds or not, but the idea is to get away from an eye roll. Because I think, like, Canada land versus Canadianity, I guess. So your project is like, what does it mean to be Canadian-ish? Like, what is Canadianity? Let's try to figure that out. And I'm trying to suggest something like Canada land. Let's put it under a microscope in a really hardcore, you know, I don't know. So I don't know if it works, but that's the idea, man.
Is it what you meant? The business, the enterprise, the word?
No. And this is why so much more than I intended it to be or could have made it. My life is this weird thing of like first 15 years is just sort of like begging for a drink. It just felt like any opportunity to just do something, to write a funny piece or to report it, do a documentary. And I was just like had my cup out trying to get anything to drink. And then all of a sudden I was drinking from a fire hose and I haven't stopped. And it actually can be unpleasant to drink from a fire hose. My greatest dream when I started this, which I thought was really unrealistic, was like, I wonder if this could be my job and not just my podcast. And then, you know, as a reach goal, you're supposed to have a reach goal when you're doing crowdfunding, like, you know, give people some idea of the grand global vision, just something to shoot for. And I said, all right, we'll become a podcast network if we reach $10,000 in crowdfunding, thinking like as if that'll ever happen. And then it did. And then I had to make it, and then I had to find people to make it with. And it's been like really difficult and bumpy, but we're doing it. And the things that my colleagues are making are things I could have never imagined or dreamed of, and the stories that people are telling. So watching it actually become this thing that lives outside of me and independently of me, and increasingly there are things that I listen to when they're published that I'm hearing for the first time, is like the greatest. Like, it's just, I can't imagine being luckier than that. It's amazing. But being equal to that, and, you know, to back up to what we were saying earlier, to hold it up and not let it collapse, which just when I feel like it has a life of its own and exists without my interference, it seems like something happens where I'm like, oh, shit, and then I've got to scramble to keep it going. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I'm living, you know? I'm just, like, just trying to build an institution, Jono.
Here's my last question, and I'm going to ask you to refrain from joking it off or shrugging it off or using sarcasm.
Do you think you could just request that? You could just ask for me to give you a genuine, sincere answer to a big question? Oh, okay. Since you asked, I'll
yeah, I'm hosting the show.
All right, try it again.
Are you happy?
Mostly not, you know? I mean, there's mostly not.
Mostly not.
I'm like, mostly not. But who the cares? Like, is that the goal? Like, that's a ridiculous. There are moments of intense joy. There's moments of pride. There's moments of accomplishment. I really like food. There's pleasure, you know? I feel contented. I feel fortunate. And there's a lot of positive stuff that if I were in your weird, you know, eat, pray, love corner of public communication, I could have various aphorisms and encouragements. But who needs to hear that? Like, it's not useful. Peace of mind would be nice, but what's the value proposition of contentedness? You know, who does that help?
Well, I guess the reason I ask the question is because I'm trying to offer the people a peek behind the curtain.
Right.
And so when they go off to dinner parties, they'll be able to say, you know what I heard? You know that crankopotamus who's always angry all the time? Guess what? He's happy.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I just think life is imperfect and there are joys of the craft. I'm working on a story and I wasn't sure if any of it was true. And then I got somebody on the phone who I'd been trying to get on the phone. And then without me giving them any of the details, they told the story that I had heard from somebody else and all of it lined up. And I realized the story was true that I'd been like going over for months or weeks anyhow. And I felt really happy, you know? I'm like, yes, we're going to get to tell people something that no one's ever heard before. Like, reporting is a drug like no other. When you are in a position of telling people a cool or interesting or important story that no one's ever heard before, that's lightning in a bottle. There's lots of pleasure and joy in my private life. But like, no, I walk around unsettled all the time, all the time. It's not right. Things aren't okay. And I'm not necessarily trying to correct that.
Did you say I'm not necessarily trying to correct it?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily trying to feel otherwise.
Huh. I got a meter saw this week, and my daughter got a new skateboard, and she asked if I could build a little ledge to set her skateboard on in her room, and I can with my new meter saw, and I built one and set her skateboard on it. That's probably the happiest I've been this calendar year.
Well, howdy doody.
I keep the bar very low, Jesse Brown. That way I am never disappointed.
You're the Gratitoad from Big Mouth, and I'm the Shame Wizard, and both have their
exactly.
place.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In all seriousness, I have a theory as to why I'm very happy. It's because I lost a parent at a young age. And much has been written about when the worst possible thing happens to you as a child, everything else seems insignificant by comparison. So it's not from nowhere that I am just in a state of bliss all the time. It's because I think I have a really good thing to compare it to.
I read that about you in that newspaper profile, and it endeared you to me as, like, I now understand why he says those horrible, painful, positive things all the time. And he's, like, kind of figured out a conception of the world that is just generous and works for the world and for him. And that's his role. He's an entertainer. Like, I provide a different service than you, man. So in this Batman-Joker kind of duality thing we're doing here, I have nothing in my childhood to complain about. And yet, look at me and look at you, right? Do you know that I enjoy you thoroughly? When you pop up on my radar, like, it's nothing but joy. When I see your tweets about, like, rainbows, they're great, and be like one, it's a certain kind of painful joy. And then thinking about what to say in return is like, I'm glad you're here.
It's your word.
I'm glad you're here.
We need each other. The very sight of my name puts a smile on your face.
It's an oversimplification. The things you say are so painful for me, they feel like abuse. It feels like you're doing it to me on purpose, even though they're tweets to the world. But when I think of the perfect response, oh, I had a good one recently.
Are you sifting through my Twitter profile?
I am.
You should share the story of Norm who knit the toque. I just met him this week in Chester.
I'm not talking about that. Maybe I'll get you to read it. On April 28th, you tweeted,
of all things to be afraid of, your own potential feels like a weird one. Oh, yeah, you roasted me bad. It was good.
I wouldn't worry about that if I were you.
Yeah, that's a good burn. You kicked a Cottonelle kitten in the face. Feels good, doesn't it?
It really does.
It's been nice chatting with you, Jesse.
It's nice having you in my life, Jonathan. That is your Canada Land for this week. You can email me. I read everything you send if you send it to jesse@canadaland.com. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand and our website is canadaland.com. This episode was produced some time ago when Sarah Larniuk was our senior producer with the help of Jonathan Goldsby, Tristan Capicchione, and our managing editor of the time, Kieran Oudshorn. Currently, our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. And I am your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called Syndications, handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Karen Pugliese, APTN, CBC, TMU, CNO, all good training for the top news job in Canada.
Nice.
EIC of Canada Land. Karen, today on the show, first, we kill the grocers. And then a serial killer, a landfill, and an all-too-real metaphor playing out right now in Winnipeg. Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Thanks, Jesse. Shoppers in the Toronto area have fewer choices if they're looking for groceries this weekend.
More than 3,000 grocery workers are on strike, arguing they can't afford to buy food at the very stores they work at.
I'm a meat manager. On these union contracts, I'm the highest paid employee, and I can't afford to live in my own city. I can't afford to shop in my own store. It's kind of sad. Like, I'm extremely paycheck to paycheck.
We know that corporate grocery stores have been making record profits, not just any old profits, but record profits.
71% of Canadians believe food costs at their local grocery stores will be even higher 6 months from now.
Mark Berry says a recent trip to this grocery store, owned by Loblaw, was humiliating. He says just before leaving the store, the wheels on his shopping cart suddenly locked.
Excuse me, this is a message for Galen Weston Jr., Baby G Money West. Can you please lower the price of these President's Choice Chicken Swisses for me? Put them on sale again.
Galen Weston will be stepping out of the spotlight as Loblaw president and CEO.
That's right. Loblaw's, after over a year of coming up with every possible excuse for why grocery prices are so high and crying poor and how it's all everyone else's fault, just posted a $500 million plus Q2 profit.
Karen, we played a lot because it goes on and on. It's across the media. Here's from print, the Toronto Star. Revenge of the wage earner. Metro grocery strike part of larger labor trend. Experts say voices of consumers, voices of citizens, voices of workers. Here is the Globe and Mail. It's time for the government to step in to freeze grocery prices. An opinion piece by our friend Vass Bedner. And the National Post. Inflation is down overall, so why are my grocery bills still going up? Is this the National Post or the Daily Worker? What is this pinko commie rag? Why am I reading in the Globe and Mail articles that sound increasingly like Pravda? Is Canada's mainstream press actually going pro-worker?
Our reporters are hungry. Hungry for stories.
That must be it. The reporters are hungry. The reporters are paying too much for their mac and cheese, and so even the establishment rags are, like, they're sharpening their pitchforks. It just feels like eat the rich stuff in, like, right-wing Canadian newspapers. The labor press of Canada. What's going on?
Well, somewhat. You know, I think it's one of those stories that actually do affect reporters and, you know, the industry, so it's something they directly relate to. I mean, never has it been more miserable to be in journalism. You know, everybody's just, you know, a paycheck away from being laid off. And everybody's affected by the same kind of fears of walking into a grocery store and seeing prices go up. It's unaffordable for everybody. And so I think that there's the irony of the people who are working there, who I think were very much on all of our minds during the pandemic. You know, I was thinking about all those stories about grocery store workers who kept going into work during the pandemic and the risk they were taking before there was, you know, a vaccine. And now the irony of them going on strike and not being able to afford the food that they're serving. It all just adds up to one of those broad stories that affects everybody, even journalists, and has that twist of irony to it.
I mean, they're getting what they deserve, because if you make a big fuss during this moment of, like, look at our workers, these are essential workers, we're giving them hero pay. Well, then when you take that pay away from them, like, you've kind of set yourself up, you know? And, like, when Galen Weston is, like, the face of the Loblaw Corporation and, like, there in his nice homey sweater, like, saying, like, don't worry, we're freezing the price of no-frills products. It's like, well, now we know you can do that. Like, yeah. It's, like, none of this bullshit of, like, no, sorry, we're just, like, we're helpless here for market forces. We must charge these things or else we would, what? I don't know what. You wouldn't make a $500 million profit. Like, their profits are up 30%. Like, we're not dumb. And I think that they're treating us like we're dumb. And that's why this, like, growing sense of public discontent and rage. And then they start, like, you know, treating us like criminals and penning us into their stores with these security gates and people checking your bags. And, like, people don't know that you do not have to comply with that technology, like shopping carts that freeze on you, the wheels seize up, like, people, like, they're really asking for it. And I mean, it's just on the street. Like, I'm seeing the lineups of the food banks. And these are these stores that I think people are furious with, because, like, you don't feel like you have a choice. Like, I've made the decision, like, 5-10 times in my life, like, I'm not going to that chain anymore. And they're just so ubiquitous that you can't do anything about it. Like, you can't boycott them if you wanted to. there's a consensus being reached. Like, I like it. I like the rage.
I got into journalism because I particularly love the feeling of moral outrage and hanging out with people who have moral outrage about things. And that's where a lot of good stories come from. But you just had so much to unpack there. There's that weird futuristic dystopia of your shopping cart wheel freezing. I actually saw somebody, I was shopping in Loblaws, and somebody ahead of me tried to sneak out with their groceries. They were going through a self-serve. And just when somebody wasn't looking, they took their groceries out. And the poor schmuck working there, as it turns out, can't afford to buy groceries himself, probably, had to chase this guy down and, be double as a security guard.
If you are working at Loblaws, do not chase shoplifters. Just and let him go.
Oh, yeah. I noticed the National Post article had talked about this study that had been done. And it was by the Competition Bureau, but it's actually called Canada Needs More Grocery Competition. Mm-hmm. So it's just right in the title what they think the problem and the solution is. Because I took a look at the report, and I thought it was really interesting to see the evolution of what we've been told. Because we're all told there were supply chain issues during the pandemic, and that made sense. I mean, everything was going up. Everything was hard to get. Obviously, like inter-border shipping, everything, fine. We understood that. And then we were told, well, there's the war in Russia and the Ukraine. And of course, that's affecting grains, breads, food oils, and that kind of makes sense. They had these kind of real life events, but they're kind of gaslighting us now to pretend that's still why the prices are going up.
I think gaslighting is the right word, but I don't know. Like the counter narrative has been like, basically they've been saying like, I know you're very mad at us, but it's not our fault. You just don't understand economics. So I want to leave open the possibility that I'm dumb and just don't understand the market realities here. And it's interesting because like sometimes when you read this stuff from like the business news from Bloomberg or something, you get a different perspective. Like there's this article, Loblaw moves to counter the grocer profiteering narrative. So this is the PR side. And of course, Galen Weston stepped down. They had that disastrous run when they were like on Twitter, like individually responding to their critics being like, hi there, Brad. I know you're frustrated about the cost of chicken, but it's really not our fault. And I do note that there's like other research coming out. I'm always suspicious of where, but this is research by economists at the Bank of Canada. So this is not commissioned research. But the way it's presented, like the Globe and Mail has a piece up, profits did not cause inflation, Bank of Canada researchers contend. And there's a picture of like a grocery. So corporate markups had little impact on inflation in Canada over the past 3 years, according to new research by economists, challenges the notion that runaway prices were driven by business profiteering. The paper published Tuesday found that markups rose early in the COVID-19 pandemics. However, the growth in markups slowed in 2021 and declined in 2022. The research lands in the middle of a thorny debate about the sources of inflation. Some left-leaning economists and politicians, notably Jagmeet Singh, have blamed inflation on opportunistic corporate price-setting behavior, so-called greedflation. But companies such as Loblaw and Metro have drawn intense political and public ire for reporting bumper profits at a time when prices are rising fast. And I've seen this piece cited, by like grocer apologists. We live in an age of grocery apologists.
Grocery apologists.
And there's you're secretly working for, and they're like, all these types. And people being like, okay, dummy, you don't understand. Like, here is the article. Here's the research from the Bank of Canada that shows the grocers are not to blame. But I ain't no genius, but what I'm reading here is what they're saying is, yes, we did increase our markup. So not just like rising our prices because our costs were rising, but the level at which we were profiting, we said, oh, everyone's used to prices going up anyhow, so let's raise them a little bit more because no one will notice, right? Like really taking advantage of people at a time when they're most vulnerable for the things they need to live. But what they're saying is, well, we stopped doing that, right? The rate at which we were increasing our markups has decreased. And don't blame us for inflation. I never thought that the rise in grocery prices were causing inflation. I thought that they were taking advantage of inflation to rise their prices beyond what they needed to. Anyhow, people aren't dumb. Like, the bottom line is the bottom line. And when you read that their profits are up 30%, they say stupid things like they just treat us like idiots. Like, oh, our profit margin is so small. It's a 3% profit. Yeah, but you're dealing in billions. So we understand that you're making billions in profits and you're making more profits than you ever used to. Like, what part of that are we getting wrong?
Yeah, Loblaw, Sobeys, and Metro collectively report more than $3.6 billion in profits, is what the Competition Bureau study said. You know, I think, like, for the average person and the average reporter, these systems, like, of course, it's complicated. Business is complicated. You're thinking of shipping. You're thinking of gasoline. There is the war. There was the pandemic. The pandemic is over. The supply chains should be straightened out right now. And we're being told that those things are actually, the prices were rising independently of that anyway. The Competition Bureau says that it is basically arbitrary price increases that are going on. But I think for your average person who steps out and goes in and sees that food is going up and that the profits of the grocery stores are going up and it's increasing so much above the inflationary rate, that's just the problem.
That's the problem. And inflation is getting curbed. It looks like they're actually bringing it down. And everyone kind of knows that your food prices are not going to come down, right? Like, I don't know. And it was interesting. I read, you know, I didn't know until Vass Bednar wrote it in the Globe and Mail that the government actually has the power to actually step in and limit the prices of, like, you know, you can't charge more than that from now on. They've done it before.
Oh, because you're young. You don't remember Pierre Elliott Trudeau and price and wage controls. Very controversial. Oh, my God. Okay, so on the conservative side, they hate price and wage controls. And on the left side, they love price and wage controls.
I mean, that seems like a pretty obvious lever the government has pulled in the past and could pull. And the other one, you know, is just the point that I think Commons, the big problem here is monopoly. Like, my grandparents, like, you know, like, there's a lot of people, like, whatever, like, new Canadians start, like, have, like, a convenience store. That's the first business. My grandparents, at the time, before big mega conglomerate grocery stores, it wasn't a convenience store. It was just your, like, corner grocer. They lived above it. It was essentially, like subsistence farming, because they had no labor costs, because they'd put, like, their eight-year-old, you know, my dad behind the cash register, and you would, like, you know, you'd eat your own inventory and live off of it and whatever profits. Like, that's just how families, and there was one in every corner. And, you know, it's, like, still this, like, thing that they kind of hearken to, in that, like, you know, even in the Loblaws chain, it'll be like Joe's Independent. It's actually called the Independent, as if you're at your local grocer's. No, that is a Loblaw chain corporatized, like it is monopoly. That's the problem. So I think price controls is one solution, but it'd be interesting to see, after completely losing the labor beat in our newsrooms, this, like, consensus from the left to the right in Canadian mainstream media, or maybe it's just hungry reporters, like, rediscovering these concepts and reminding the electorate that, like, yeah, your government can do something about this. I don't know. It's kind of encouraging. And it's the convergence of, like, everybody seems to be angry. So maybe the press can play a role in informing people of what to do with that anger. I want to duly note that it's over. It's over between Canadian News and Facebook, and it's hit us. Already we're getting reports that people who are trying to share our stuff or see our stuff on Instagram or Facebook, it's getting blocked. And probably by the time people are listening to this, Canada Land and everybody else will be off, booted off of Facebook and Instagram and maybe Threads.
Actually, Jesse, I was one of the early people who got blocked on Instagram, and I noticed that a bunch of places were blocked. Candleland was not. And yes, Candleland is now blocked on my very own Instagram.
Yeah, very flattering to know that they consider us news and therefore are banning us. And, you know, all of the work that, like, we put into getting people to like our page and building up our Instagram, you know, like this is just a welcomed and encouraged to not just put our content on this platform, but create content for this platform so that people who want to get it can get it there, was all wasted effort. It's a dead venue for us and everybody else. It affects us less than others. There are other, you know, like, website-based news services and digital startups in Canada that are really, really affected by this, that really rely on Facebook for not just for traffic, but, like, you know, there's a business plan that, like, Village Media and others have, where when there's a community, local news that like has been abandoned by mainstream news, the community will start a Facebook community page. And everybody's trading information and often gossip and bad information. And then they want to set up shop and build a newsroom. Where do they go to let people know? They go and they advertise. They give Facebook money and they say, hey, we have a news site for this community. And that's a really important way of building that audience. And then they use Facebook further still to get people to get traffic. And that's really, that's gone now. And that's like, there is a freeze. There's a hiring freeze at Village Media. They're not expanding into new markets. This is something that is really affecting a lot of news. The parts of the news business in Canada that actually were growing are now on like standstill because of this. And, you know, there's a vibe out there of like everybody's dumping on Facebook and, you know, like you're being mean to Canada and this is bad and you've been stealing. And everyone knows that I don't really partake in that. Like this was.
People kind of know your opinion on this by now.
Look, this is entirely predictable. It's exactly what they said they would do. It's rational. Like, you know, here's an analogy. If you're running a like community coffee shop and you've got a bulletin board at the front and it's free for people to come and stick like guitar lessons or garage sale, and you do that not out of charity, but it helps keep people coming into your coffee shop and it creates a sense that your coffee shop is a bit of a community hub. That's a nice thing to offer for free, but it also helps your business. But then imagine the mayor says to you, hey, you're stealing these notices. From now on, every time somebody puts up a guitar lesson flyer, you have to pay them a dollar. It would be entirely rational for that coffee shop to say, well, A, that's absurd, and B, we're taking down the bulletin board. So I can't blame anybody but the government for Facebook banning news. But I don't want that to be confused with like support for Facebook or sympathy for Facebook. Facebook is not a local coffee shop, right? Like, I think that analogy only goes so far.
The analogy only goes so far. I was going to refuse to duly note this, but please continue.
This is actually what I want to duly note here is like, because, you know, we're parting company. We're after years of news and Facebook having a relationship, we're saying goodbye to each other. And I do have some words here because they're not a coffee shop. They're something that we've never, there's no analogy for Facebook. They're something new. They are a privacy invading, division sowing, compulsion creating ad company that builds machines that make us hate and fear each other and make us lose faith in the very possibility of objective truth. And they didn't, you know, set out to build that, but that's what they ended up building. They have wreaked havoc. They've done damage to our attention spans, to our civics, to our relationships, to our public and private lives. And they have lied to us about that. As they've done that, put a few dimes here and there into programs to tell us that they're doing the opposite of that. And I remember when the Trudeau government partnered with them on like the democracy strengthening, you know, like they're actually telling us that they're helping us. And specifically with reference to news, where they have just like left things in such a shambles after encouraging us to make videos and encouraging us and encouraging us. And now look, this is what they said. I remember what they said. Just 2 years ago, this is from Meta, Facebook. We know the important role journalism plays in keeping people informed and safe, which is why we want to do our part to contribute to the long-term sustainability of journalism and help increase underrepresented voices in newsrooms. In addition to the News Innovation Test, we're investing $8 million over the next 3 years to help Canadian publishers build sustainable business models through programs like the Facebook Canadian Press News Fellowship and the BIPOC Media Growth Program. We will continue to listen to the people who use our apps to provide them with the best experience and closely collaborate with publishers to support them in delivering quality journalism. Well, I get why they're banning news. I do. But they're also calling off their sustainability checks, their actual business deals. And they're doing it very cynically. They're not doing it the same day that they ban news, because that would compound all the bad press. They're letting people get checks for 3 more months, I understand, before all these newsrooms, some of them small, struggling newsrooms that believed Facebook, or at least had reason to believe Facebook, we're investing in your long-term sustainability and we're going to license your news content. All of that money is drying up and there is nothing stopping Facebook from continuing to support news in Canada with help to make up for some fraction of the damage they've done. There is nothing to stop them from continuing that. And it's just spiteful taking their ball and going home as a fuck you to the government, and we're getting caught in the middle of this. So I guess what I want to duly note, as we say goodbye to this period of news and Facebook collaborating, is fuck you guys. Fuck you, Facebook.
Honestly, we disagree on so many things, but I've got your back on that comment. Duly noted. You, Facebook.
That's Shortcuts. Karen, thank you for joining me. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. I can be emailed about anything you heard today at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. Karen.
Yes.
Where can people reach you?
Oh, well, they can reach me here at Canada Land. Karen@canadaland.com.
That's Karen with a Y at CanadaLand.com. This episode is produced by Aviva Lasard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our editor-in-chief is you, Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called, syndication by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.